Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Welcome to the Fighting on Film podcast, the podcast all about classic and obscure war movies, from the Normandy landings to the days of chivalry and swords. If it's been captured on film, we're going to try and cover it. I'm Robbie of RM Military History.
I'm Matthew Moss of Historical Firearms and the Armourer's Bench. Hello there, sorry to interrupt. I wanted to let you know that you can now join our supporting cast over on Patreon. As thanks for your support, you'll be able to help us pick films, submit questions for guests, have first pick on brand new and exclusive merch, and much more. Thank you for your support. Now back to the show.
Hello, welcome back to Fighting on Film. Now, we're recording this episode on Halloween, but if last week's film was a shocker, this week's is anything but. Chosen by our faithful Patreon supporters, it's Bat 21, which has a Halloween thing in the title. We got there in the end, Matt. Yeah. We linked it in. Yeah. We did it. So, yeah, thanks to our patrons for choosing this one. I know that there's been some patrons.
There's been clamour for this for a while. And we put three Vietnam movies up, and then Narvik, the recent film, as a wild card. Mm. And it was almost won, actually. It was almost a draw. Then Bat 21 pulled ahead.
45% of the vote, I think. Which was, you know, nearly half.
Good enough.
But yeah, do look out for another Patreon pick coming later on in the month. Matt, maybe you should do production and then we'll get into cast.
Absolutely. So the film was directed by Peter Markle. And in terms of kind of conflict-related films, he did Faith of My Fathers in 2005, which was a John McCain biopic.
Nice.
Tells the story of his experience joining the military, being shot down over Vietnam, and his imprisonment and then release. In 2006, he directed Flight 93, and in between then, he did a lot of TV work, CSI, X-Files, all sorts of different things. The film was produced by Vision PDG and Eagle Films. It was written by William C. Anderson, who himself was a US Air Force officer. Running from the Second World War through to Vietnam. And
nice.
He retired as a colonel. And he wrote the book about the rescue attempts and Bat 21 in general. And then he helped adapt the screenplay. He also wrote an episode of 12 O'Clock High in 1975. And he worked on the screenplay with George Gordon, who was a prolific animator and director of animated programs, including the Smurfs, Toonheads, New Scooby-Doo, Casper. And in 1943, he was also an animator on Mouse at War, which was a Tom and Jerry. It's like short, which
very nice.
Had Tom and Jerry basically fighting World War II in a basement.
Mm.
I have seen
I wish there were more animated war films. There aren't many.
I know. We need. There's a few, and we need to do a few of them, I think.
Bashir is good. That's a good one.
There's definitely a couple that we could definitely do an animated month.
We could eke it out, yeah. If we did Dirty Dozen December, we could definitely.
Yeah, anything's
definitely
possible.
Do it.
Music was by Christopher Young, and cinematography was provided by Mark Erwin, and he's known for RoboCop 2, Scream, the original Scream film. He was also the cinematographer on Flight 93, which was obviously directed by Markle. In 2006, he also provided cinematography for Big Mama's House 2.
Amazing.
And, yep. And in 1992, he worked on Passenger 57, which I believe is a another one of those classic 90s hijack movies.
Yeah, there's a lot of them.
There definitely was. We were talking about this the other day, how many plane hijack movies there were in the 90s. And then another notable credit was the TV movie Hanoi Hilton in 1987.
Oh, yes.
Special effects was provided by Richard E. Johnson. And costume design was by Audrey M. Bansmer, who worked on Delta Force 2, The Colombian Connection, Avenging Force, American Warrior, American Ninja 2, and the TV show Frasier.
Great.
What a brilliant career trajectory.
Topical.
Going from American Warrior to Frasier. Nice.
Yeah.
And interestingly, Lieutenant Colonel Aseel Hambleton, who the film is about, Bat-21 himself, was the technical advisor on the film. And
well,
that's interesting, and we'll talk about that a bit later on, I think. In terms of locations, it was actually filmed in Malaysia, in Borneo, with the assistance of the federal government of Malaysia and their armed forces. So a lot of the big kit on screen that you see was provided by the Malaysian Royal Army and Royal Air Force.
Yeah, it was. More on that later.
Mm. And the film's budget was a healthy $10 million. But the return wasn't great, which is a bit of a surprise, really.
Mm.
With I think the budget was $10 million and the return was $3.1 million. So it definitely didn't make its money back in theaters. It might have done on home release, etc.
Yeah,
but
possibly in that era you could.
Yeah,
you really could clean up a VHS.
It definitely surprised me because it's in that period, isn't it, of a raft of good Vietnam War movies and even good B Vietnam War movies.
Yeah. And Hackman's coming off of Uncommon Valor as well. So, interesting.
So that basically rounds out production for this week.
Oh, nice one. That's good. So some good stuff there, Matt. So into cast, and then we'll do retro review and the one-word reviews. So aforementioned, Gene Hackman plays Lieutenant Colonel Aseel Hambleton. Hackman, as we mentioned on the pod before when we did Uncommon Valor, is a two-time Oscar winner. You'll know him from The French Connection, The Conversation, which is a fantastic movie. As I said, Uncommon Valor, Under Fire, Esau Sabowski in A Bridge Too Far. He was in March or Die and Behind Enemy Lines and countless other things. Massive, massive actor. Then we have Danny Glover, who I think is making his debut on the pod as Captain Bartholomew Clark, codenamed Bird Dog. He's a four-time Emmy nominee, probably best known for his role as Murtaugh in the Lethal Weapon franchise. Famously coined the phrase, "I'm too old for this shit." And he also appeared in Predator 2. He's in Flight of the Intruder, Operation Dumbo Drop, which is another Vietnam War film we must cover, Matt. So I actually quite like that film. He was in a TV film called Buffalo Soldiers, which is an American Civil War film. And he was also in a Wes Anderson film called The Royal Tenenbaums, which I'm sure Matt knows all about because he's a... Along with Gene, yes, of course. Yes. How could I have missed that out? Matt is our resident Wes Anderson file. He's a big fan. So am I, actually, to be fair. Anyway, next we have Jerry Reed as Colonel George Walker. He's a famous country singer turned actor. He played Cletus in Smokey and the Bandit in its sequel. And he was in Waterboy. And he also appeared as himself in Scooby-Doo in the 70s.
I wonder if that was animated by George Gordon.
Very may well have been.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Reggie? I'm going to go to a Vietnam movie, Reggie. There we have David Marshall Grant playing Ross Carver. He's the Jolly Green pilot. He wears a red headband in the movie. He was in Kent State, a TV movie. He was in Dallas, the early years, Forever Young. He was in The Rock in an uncredited role. He's also in Dawson's Creek and one of my personal favourites, The Devil Wears Prada. He's in that one. I do love that film. He's Clayton Rona is up next. He plays Sergeant Harley Rumbar. He was in a plethora of, you know, well-known American TV shows. Miami Vice, Beverly Hills 90210, NYPD Blue, The X-Files, ER, and Justified. And he also appeared in Depeche Mode's music video for their single Not Tonight, which I thought was a nice little inclusion. Then we have Eric Anderson as Major Jake Scott. He's in Friday the 13th, The Final Chapter. He was in Missing in Action, the Chuck Norris movie. Murder, She Wrote, Dallas, Quantum Leap, Matlock, and JAG, which is like that naval, sort of core procedural drama. Then we have, finally, rounding out the cast, because it's quite a lean cast. There's not many people at play in the movie. And I think the movie works. It's all the better for it because of that.
Yeah,
doesn't muddle itself with side characters or B-plots. You have Joe Dorsey as Colonel Douglas. Yet again, another prolific TV actor and film actor. He's been in War Games, Roots, The Incredible Hulk, Hill Street Blues, and a TV film that's 3 and a bit hours long, which sounds really interesting, called Guts and Glory, The Rise and Fall of Oliver North, which I'm sure has everything from Contras to CBS News in it. So that would be quite interesting.
Wow.
Yeah, just reminds me of the American Dad song. It's like, he's a novelist and a patriot, and now he's on Fox News. It just reminds me of that. Ollie North. Love it. Anyway, moving on to the retro review this week. Joining us again for the retro review is good old Roger Ebert, from the date of the film's release in October.
Do you think there was any film that Roger didn't watch back in the day?
Probably not. No, he was prolific.
I reckon he had very little time for anything else.
No, because I love Siskel and Ebert. I used to watch...
Roger, do you want to come play tennis on Thursday? No, I can't possibly do that. I'm watching 8 films. I'm
watching a film? Me and Siskel have got loads of films to watch.
We've got 8 films to do on that morning alone. I'd love to, but no.
No, exactly. No, I do watch the old rerun of Siskel and Ebert on YouTube. It's just...
They're very watchable.
So great. So great. They're like... you know, like The Trip... Rob Brydon and Steve Coogan. They're like but for movies for me.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I'd love a biopic about them. It'd be so good.
There's a Netflix movie in that,
isn't there? There is, yeah. You know who might play him well, actually? Jonah Hill.
Oh, okay.
Jonah Hill might do Ebert if he bulked up again. It might be cool. Anyway, so on to the retro review. I've got a couple of paragraphs this week. Bat 21 is the kind of lean, no-nonsense war film Hollywood used to make back before the subject became burdened with metaphysical insights. It's a story of a middle-aged Air Force colonel's attempt to survive behind enemy lines, where he has no business being in the first place, and about how stubborn spotter pilot returns time and time again in a light aircraft to keep his spirits up. The movie could have been about any modern war, and in Gene Hackman it has its everyman. Hambleton isn't a fighting man, but a desk officer who takes a cup of coffee along on his foolhardy mission and is sipping it when the missiles strike his airplane. He has no combat experience, has never gotten close to the front lines, and is horrified by his encounter with the Vietnamese family that leads him to kill for the first time. This is not a combat movie, but the story of a man who spent almost his entire career keeping war at arm's length until it reached out and grabbed him.
Gene was pushing some buttons when the missile hit, to be fair to him.
Gene was doing a bit more than sipping some coffee, like, you know.
But yeah.
Not like Hambleton hadn't been in the US Navy Air Force, the US Air Force, for decades at that point.
Yeah. He'd recently just done the Escape and Evasion
courses
again, by all accounts.
To read up on his Vietnam War history there, guys.
But to be fair... We'll talk about it later on as well, but I did like the fact that that my point has just completely just left my mind.
That's staying
it's just
in.
Fucking gone.
Just Matt's brain just went, you know, like in a cartoon where like the thought brain just leaves the little like head. Just left.
Oh my God. It'll come back to me because it was a fair point.
We'll be halfway through the alley telly going, Matt, go, it was this.
It will. That will happen, guaranteed.
So on to the one word review there in light of Matt's lightheadedness, shall we say. So the movie, I think, is beloved by nearly everyone who commented on the one word review thread this week.
And there was,
you know, a massive outpour of love. So Rob Shipman, we must shout out, is one of our patrons, and he's been gunning for Bat 21 since the inception of the podcast, I might add.
See, I mean, don't let anyone say that if you join our Patreon, we will eventually do a film that you continue to ask for.
Exactly.
I mean, we're not that kind of podcast, but it has happened.
It happens.
You know, finally.
There's hope, guys. So Rob Shipman simply goes, simply with legendary. Ian McKellen goes Hackman, and he puts a smiling emoji. Lance Nielsen goes with gripping. Conrad Radders goes with golfers. Seri Thomas says Sky Raider. The Sloppy Link goes with golf. Jim Duduku says solid. Ian Mays, interesting. Dr. Stephen Marushin goes with over par. Steve Metcalf says gene-tastic. Diggin' Robat, Sam. Mark C, Bronco. Rob Nickel, Bird Dog. Jeff Power says minefield. And to round us up, Craig Seaton says Cessna. But there was many, many, many more. And I think this movie is, as I said, just really well-liked by everyone who's seen it, I think.
Yeah. And I think that has something to do with what Ebert's review kind of captured as well, in that it is a straightforward picture. There is no...
Yeah, it's lean.
B-plot. There is no messing around with...
No.
Sort of trying to show different perspectives. There's no baddie.
There isn't really.
It's just the Vietnamese and the hell of war. That is they are the antagonists.
The clusterfuck of the Easter Offensive when, you know, the NVA got their shit together and started pushing finally, you know, when the US pulled out effectively. I've got it in my notes. The plot starts, you know, Gene Hackman gets blown up and is parachuting down at 7:30. That's how quick the movie gets into it. You see Hackman playing golf. He gets himself involved in that Sam jamming mission. Mm-hmm. Sam jamming sounds like a band or an album name.
Nice.
It's Sam jamming, the sound of the summer, 1972. And then you're into the plot. I loved how quick it was.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's very straightforward. It almost has a sort of TV movie approach to it, in that it does fast, it goes straight into it, and it's really well paced. But again, that's kind of final thoughts territory.
Off the top of my head, I can't remember the name of the production company. Is it Orion, who like made all of like the who made like Delta Force? They made RoboCop. They did that mercenary movie we did in Freedom Fighters film. You know how quickly they get into things.
Yeah.
There's no fucking about. You're just in. Like, this is what the movie's about. Mm. You know, get used to it, kind of thing. It's how it feels. Yeah.
And it's a straightforwardness that does hark back, but is also present in, you know, American filmmaking of that period. To compare it to another Vietnam movie of the same sort of ilk, Siege of Firebase Gloria gets into it quick.
That doesn't mess about, does it?
Hmm.
They're at the firebase blooming quick in that.
Yeah. And and to be fair to the film, I think this might be the point I was going to make earlier, where Roger talks about it doesn't... I can't remember exactly what he said, but he talks about it not being metaphysical and looking at philosophy. I don't know. I think the film has a very anti-war streak through it with Hackman's character coming into contact with what the Air Force is doing
on the ground,
and he's encountering it on the ground.
Necessarily,
there's a number of ways it does it really well, because not only is he seeing indiscriminate death from, you know, striking the village, but also there's more nuanced stuff, like the the Vietnamese farmer's son has a horrific burn from probably an napalm strike or something.
Yeah, it's subtle things. It doesn't bat it over the head.
Mm.
You know, Gene doesn't look at him and go, "Oh, you poor thing. What have my helicopters done to you?" Like, he doesn't, you know, a lesser writer would have worked that in somehow. Like, what are we doing to these people? Like, you don't really get it. I think Hackman has one line where he goes, "I've seen enough death," or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is where he decides
not to shoot the MVA soldier towards the end. You know,
then gets obliterated by a napalm.
But he makes the conscious decision not to to shoot him himself.
Mm.
And you can see that mindset evolve throughout the film, which I really liked. But again, it's time for the Ellie Tally.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's time for Ally Tally on Fighting on Film.
Yes, the Ally Tally back again. So, Matt, why don't you kick us off? I kicked off last week, why don't you?
Oh, yeah, Ally shout Tally out in. To Gene Hackman's character's excellent choice in pistol, Browning High.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say that.
Love it. Perfect. 13 round magazine. 9mm, lighter than a 1911. Perfect flight vest sort of sidearm. Love it.
We love a Browning High Power on the show, don't we?
Very cool gun.
So much so that Matt's been trying to buy an airsoft replica for weeks. And at the time of recording, no supplier in the UK has the version that he wants.
Oh, yeah, it's true. I like that Gene and Danny both use a very OG M16, probably a Colt SP1.
That's nice.
With the 3-prong flash hider and no forward assist. That's been probably sat in the back of Danny's helicopter since 1966, I would guess.
Probably. Crew weapon, nice.
Yeah. I liked the film, but there isn't a lot of meat on the bones.
And no.
That's a good thing, but also it means there's not a lot of Ally kit, but there's a lot of Ally aircraft.
Yeah, I mean, I know. So in terms of aircraft, I mean, we've got a whole bunch, like, and they're supplied by, as Matt said, the Royal Malaysian Air Force. You have Sikorsky SH-3 Sea Kings, which are, you know, the Jolly Greens, a Cessna 337A Super Skymaster that's acting as a military 02 Skymaster, which replaced the Cessna 01 Bird Dog, which I thought might have been a reference.
Clark lent on the 801s.
I like to think in my head canon, Clark was like a master at flying the bird dogs, and it just kind of stuck.
Clearly, I mean, he talks about himself being the oldest captain in the Air Force, which I liked.
Yeah,
because he's like 10 years too old for the role anyway. Because it's like 35 was supposed to be. He's definitely too old for this shit.
Yeah, man. I don't know if they didn't. Isn't it? It's too early for that line, isn't it? Isn't that
too early? Yeah, it's a couple of years later, I think.
So my Ally pick this week is Hambleton's Vest Survival Type SRU-21, which is, in layman's terms, a aircrewman survival vest.
Which houses that great high power.
Yeah. So it's a nylon gilet style vest with multiple pouches and a holster sewn into the left, which you do see in use. And I think it's possibly one of the few on-screen depictions of its use in Vietnam. And they're quite prevalent in air crews and, air crew personnel wore them in Vietnam and beyond. And I just love to see its use. Hackman's got all sorts of gadgets and doodads in there, I'm sure, but he uses predominantly a little spotting scope. To see
like
things.
A strobe as well, and a compass, and some charts and stuff.
I just love to see it. It was a really nice little thing. It shows, that they don't just drop in naked. I like the fact that thought's gone into it, because I'm sure Hambleton, in the real rescue, I'm sure it was worth its weight in gold with all the knickknacks it had in it. And I also really like Danny Glover's Atlanta Braves baseball cap and t-shirt, because I think it just really humanizes. No, I know. I like it because it's like a bit of Americana and different sort of costuming. But I think it really grounds his character in a way, and it really humanizes him. Like, he's got a whole life back home. It's just really nice. I thought it might have been a nod to like Danny Glover's like childhood home or something, but he grew up in San Francisco, so who's to know?
Obviously just crafted it for the character, I guess.
Yeah, I like it. It's really nice.
Or he's a fan.
Or maybe he's a fan. Yeah, who knows? As I said, as Matt said, because it's quite lean, there's not much in there in the way of kit and equipment, but, you've got mainstays of Vietnam films. You've got an M16 in there, as Matt said, an M60. There's flak jackets, typical NAM
MVA fare. With captured M2 Brownings.
Yeah, I like that. All the MVA lads are knocking around with... captured American belts
lots
and things like that.
Lots of Chinese Type 56 Spiker AKs.
Yeah, very nice to see. Very nice to see. A Makarov's in there too. Gets drawn at one point, which is quite nice. Going back to aircraft, there's Northrop F-5s and Super Sabres that provide air support. And I think those Super Sabres must have been stock footage. I'm not sure if the Malaysian Air Force had them.
Yeah, I don't know, because they're marked up as US Air Force, weren't they? So,
yeah, exactly. Not sure. And in terms of vehicles, there isn't much on the ground. And did some digging, so don't quote me on this. So I think the bombing run vehicles are, because I'm a truck guy for some reason. I just like trucks, which is weird because I don't really like vehicles. I don't really like cars in real life. I don't give a toss about cars. I think they're possibly Volvo FL7s or Isuzu FTS33H trucks. They were both used by the Malaysian army in the 80s. So they might be that. And God knows what those tanks were, because they were so well camouflaged. I couldn't work out what they were.
I know. It was a bit tricky, wasn't it? I think the Malaysian APCs, I don't know what they used at the time, but they definitely weren't BMPs or anything.
No, they weren't.
Over it, were they?
They weren't. It's enough, isn't it? It does enough to set the scene. But I think maybe we should talk about the real rescue a little bit. So the movie's based upon the real 12-day rescue of Hambleton in 1972, when he was shot down during the North Vietnamese Easter Offensive. The film doesn't show, however, the efforts of US Navy SEAL Thomas R. Norris and his South Vietnamese petty officer Nguyen Van Kiet, who rescued Hambleton in the end, because this rescue was enormous. It was one of the most in-depth, expensive rescues ever, and a lot of people have asked the question, what price do you put on a human life? And this showed that the Air Force puts no price on getting one of their men out, considering he was an expert in the jamming of SAMs. He's quite a high prize target, and you don't want someone like that falling into MVA hands, especially not in a time where the Americans are drawing down their combat operations in Vietnam anyway. Norris and Kiet went in dressed as North Vietnamese fishermen, and they got him out, and by putting him under bamboo reeds and things in a boat, and they ushered him out. It was one of the final SEAL actions of the war, and Norris won a Medal of Honor for his efforts, and Kiet won a Navy Cross, which is the highest naval award that can be awarded to a foreign national. So it's a film about those guys, please, because at the time it wasn't classified, so that's why it's not in there.
It was classified, yeah.
It was at the time. It was classified.
I know what you mean.
But no, it's fascinating.
It is, and at the end of the film's okay, but I think introducing another character would have confused.
They rush it.
Things. you know, introducing a Navy SEAL character would have confused things a bit, I think.
I wouldn't have minded that.
No, I mean, there's a way of doing that, isn't there? Yeah, there's a way of having that. It's worth noting that 5 additional aircraft were shot down during the rescue attempts, and 11 airmen were killed during rescue efforts, which is kind of depicted with when the Jolly Green gets downed and the crew is killed.
Sort of, they do it in their own way, don't they?
In 97, 6 of the bodies were interned at Arlington of the 11. So I think the film does a fairly decent job of trying to show some of the cost of rescuing Hamilton. But obviously it's difficult to convey that kind of scale of operation with the budget they had.
Yeah, I think so. And also one thing they don't do in the movie, which I thought was fascinating when I was reading about it, and what was great documentaries on YouTube, guys, if you
there is, learn more about
the genuine
too.
Rescue. Me and Matt have been sending them to each other all this week as we prepared for this episode, because we were just like, I hope it's about 21, because we really wanted to watch it. But there was no fire zone implemented around Hambleton during the real rescue, something that isn't depicted in the movie. You know, there's bombs going off all around him all the time. But Arvin units sustained some pretty big losses and casualties during the rescue because they couldn't call in fire support because they were around the area of Hambleton's rescue. And I've read somewhere, and some people think, well, the Easter Offensive got off to a good start because there were elements of the line that couldn't be held because there was no air support and there was no fire support being brought in. I don't know how much that would have affected the Easter Offensive, because just the amount of kit and equipment and men that were pushing it through was enormous. So I'm not sure. But in terms of cost and logistical elements, things like that, I'm pretty sure it must have fed in its own way into the offensive doing really rather well. And, you know, as we know, that offensive was, you know, it won the war for the North Vietnam, essentially. But it just incredible stuff. You know, there's another movie in this, is essentially what I'm getting at in terms of things that happen.
Yeah, you could totally make a new movie or even a mini series about the escape and invasion
every day.
The escape and invasion, the SEALs' efforts, and give a bit of perspective from the Vietnamese as well.
Would be good because Norris went in and he had a lot of South Vietnamese commandos, effectively South Vietnamese SEALs with him, who at one point refused to go further, and it was Kiet that volunteered to go in. Some incredibly brave people, you know, and even to get a SEALs Vietnam movie would be great.
Yeah. And it's interesting, really cool. It's late war too. I mean, there's so many Vietnam explored. War movies that don't touch 70 onwards.
No. As I think everyone forgets, I think in the grand learning of Nam, I think you think 68, you think Tet Offensive, and then it's pretty much Saigon in 75. You know, I think that gap is a big gap in terms of movies and cultural touchstones. You know, you get Kent State in 1970, obviously, back home. But in terms of the war going on, I think it gets lost.
Yeah, and the way that the war is characterized in a lot of films, 1969 is often depicted as being late war. Where in reality, it's another few years.
There's still chaps on the ground in 73.
Yeah. I think that brings us to favourite scenes.
I think it does. So I'll kick off favourite scenes, if that's okay.
Go for it.
So I really enjoy... as I said, 7 minutes 30 is when the plot kicks in of Hambleton being shot down. Mm. And I really like the initial scene of Hackman hitting the ground and Clark responding to the rescue, because as we've mentioned before, you know, the film wastes no time getting into that central plot. And then you just see the bond created between the ground and the air, Clark and Hambleton, And you've got Clark saying, "I'm the lifeguard, you're the drowning man. If you relax, I can bring you to shore. If you resist, I'll have to slap you around a little bit." And you can tell in that really simple two sentences that, you know, Clark cares about his mission, and you get the feeling he's done this like countless times. You know, like, this is going to be a routine like any other. Yeah. You know, this guy, as far as Clark's concerned, this guy's just some grunt, you know, some no name air.
Yeah, he doesn't initially know he's significant. He just, all he knows is his call sign, and that's about it. He doesn't even know rank or anything like that.
No. And then that brings me into why I really think the movie works is because of that core chemistry between Hackman and Glover, which, even though they only probably spend, I don't know, probably
yeah,
10
it's not
minutes.
Even on, it's not even in person chemistry.
No.
Their scenes were obviously filmed separately.
Yeah. And you only see them on screen together, like in 10 minutes together, right near the end, I think 10, 15 minutes. It's probably longer. But I think this
one
really
works.
I don't
think it is. I think it is the last 10 minutes. So
yeah, but all those scenes in the early stages where Hackman's moving to one place to another place, you're given the golf references, which is something that did happen. Mm-hmm. So in case the radio was picked up, then the North Vietnamese wiretappers would have no idea what they were talking about. You know, the thing about the Swanee, that's a real thing that did happen. So I just really enjoy that. The building of the relationship between the two men is really strong and powerful. And it's my favorite scene. It's that early bit where they're creating their relationship. I really enjoy it.
Yeah. Good choice. Mine is Danny basically learning to fly a helicopter.
That is funny. That's a funny scene. Yeah.
There's a few nice scenes of on the ground. There's a few interesting scenes between the squadron mates.
Yeah.
Danny chatting around the poker table. And the Jolly Green pilot, they build a relationship between the two of them, you know, the mutual respect element of that really nicely. Mm. So that his death does hit home. And
yeah.
That's good scripting, that's good filmmaking, the way that they managed to do that without really laboring it.
No, it's not labored.
It's a bit of a hallmark of this film in that all the relationships are created through good scripting, good performances that aren't overly labored. And there isn't a lot of pandering to the audience in that we need to set this up.
No, it's not. Yeah.
And it doesn't really do that. The scene I really liked, I thought was interesting, was the scene on board the B-52 that is doing the electronic warfare with tracking the SAM sites and stuff. I thought that was really interesting side of things that you don't see very often.
I love the model work on that.
Yeah, pretty good, wasn't it?
It's fine. Yeah, but I kind of love it. Looks very 50s.
Definitely a TV movie vibe to it.
When one of the SAM missiles comes up and the plane like does this really jerky movement to get out of the way of it, it reminded me of Thunderbirds. It was like really quite cute and twee.
Like if you compare it to Strategic Air Command, which we did on the show a few months,
it's true, actually, a while back now,
it's definitely not even in the same league as that, but it was okay.
It's fine, and it's only on screen for like what, 30 seconds? Not even
that's why they haven't thrown a lot of money into it.
No, I love it. It's great. And and maybe with that we should mosey on into final thoughts like we always do. So as you know, as we've been saying all along, it's a very straightforward, like proper no frills, no strings attached war film. There's no B plot, there's no C plot. You know, you learn very little about these men, really. And you don't really learn anything about the grander scheme of the war. It doesn't do what a lot of Vietnam movies do of that era and since, where they get into the morality of it, the whys, the hows, the ifs, the buts. It's not about that. It's literally about getting Hackman out. And I think that's why it's so strong and why probably it's so beloved, because whether you're into war or not, you can enjoy this movie because it's a human story. It's not trying to be like, well, the Americans shouldn't be in Vietnam, blah blah blah, imperialism, yada yada. It's not about that. It's just two guys doing their jobs and trying to help someone escape a dangerous situation.
Because
it reminded me how like other NAM films take quite a long time to get into their plot. So, like, to not pick on it, because I do enjoy it, but We Were Soldiers takes an absolute age to get to the...
Oh, it does. That is very true. Yeah.
To get to the battle, and you learn so much about these men, and you have, as a viewer, you have a hell of a lot of skin in the game, and I understand why it needs to do that. But sometimes I think, when you're going a bit hard here, I don't need to see them having a big party. I don't need to know about every little detail of everyone. And this movie doesn't do it, and I think it's all the better for it. But then on the other hand, it's not as gritty and visceral as something like Rescue Dawn in 2006 is. And that's a POW movie, and it's an escape film. It's a completely different kind of movie, but it's got an airman in there being shot down. They're different sides of the same coin, really. I just think it all works. I mean, I can tell now why the Patreons and the listeners have been wanting us to cover this one for a while, because it was just a really nice film to watch. Like, I can't really pick anything out that I don't like, but I have one thing, and I will in a minute, but I'm going to let you go, and then I'll jump in with something negative.
I would disagree that there's no moral element to it, because I think the anti-war streak that we mentioned a little bit earlier is probably that element to it. It just doesn't do it in a ham-fisted way, or...
Right. I didn't pick up on it as much.
The way
as
that
you,
some films did, and it doesn't try and be very philosophical with it the way other films did. It's a very human reaction. That I think that Hackman carries off quite well, because he's shocked, because he's gung ho. He wants to call in an airstrike on the crossroads, and he acts as a forward observer. But once he sees the effect of the napalm. Crossroads.
Yeah, you are.
There's
right,
wounded
you are.
MVA, and one's part of his misery, and he's looking out through his little monocle, and he's kind of shocked
through his eyes. No, I get where you're going with it. Yeah.
And then later, there's the unfortunate incident with the Vietnamese farmer, who's kind of stumbles onto him while he's mooching around eating some rice in his hut, his workshop, basically. I think if Gene had put down the little box that he'd probably spent like 6 weeks carving, there wouldn't have been the fight that ensued.
Maybe not.
And I like the part where he tells Clark that he killed a man today. And Clark has no point of reference for that. And he just says, Roger that. Doesn't really comment on it back, because they're both Air Force officers and they're both flyers. They've never engaged with conflict and the actual human impacts of war on the ground. So this is the first time for Hamilton to actually encounter suffering from the acts and missions that the Air Force is undertaking.
Mm.
Clark has no point of reference for that. No point of reference for actually hand-to-hand, close quarters, death.
Yeah.
So, and, I mentioned earlier the young lad with the burn, and then the part where the Jolly Green is forced to land and its pilot is shot, which really affects Danny's character. But at the same time, you get that feeling of intense guilt from Gene, because he says, I'm just going to hand myself in. I'm just going to surrender. And Glover has to explain, like, even if they get you, they're not going to let that crew live.
You're not getting out. Yeah.
Yeah. So I really liked the nuance of that. And I thought,
okay,
it could have been an even more straightforward movie where it is just point A to point B, him getting out. It's a survival story. But there's a little element of that I thought was good. I thought the pacing was great. I thought it was beautifully shot. Some of those pre-dawn sequences of the landscape where the sun's coming up and he's moving over the crests, really nicely done.
Yeah.
There's some impressive aerial stuff too, where the Cessna is flying over the Jolly Green.
There's some great
in and out of
shots.
The Huey, where they're zipping past the village. The end obviously doesn't depict the actual accurate rescue.
No, it's over a bit quick, I think. The end is one of my few issues.
I would agree there. But at the time, the documents hadn't been released, the story wasn't fully publicly told. Norris did win that Medal of Honor, of course.
He did,
All in all, I enjoyed it. It's no Firebase Gloria for me. I love that film. It's got that.
Are you looking at like B-tier NAM films, are you?
Yeah, yeah. But it's good. It's really good.
It's I love Danny Glover. I absolutely loved, sorry.
I love Danny Glover. I love Gene Hackman, and they're both great in it. So it's a really solid, good picture.
Yeah. Yeah. So my only, and I wholeheartedly am with you there. I did enjoy it. My only issue, and it's a very slim issue, really. As I say, I think the ending is wound up a bit quick. I personally might have ended it a little bit differently. Because I was doing rivet counting, but on all the sort of, when the credits are rolling, I was like, but that boat could just be shot up in the next 5 minutes. Like, you know.
Yeah, and it looked nothing like a US patrol boat either.
No, it didn't look like a PBR at all. I think they tried to make it look like, I can't remember the exact names, but there were these bigger assault craft that could be used. And I think it was meant to be one of those. I can't remember the exact name. I should know because I wrote a blooming article about them. Anyway, but one of my issues is, and it leans back into
Robbie's
the
just published a really great video on his YouTube channel about hovercraft in Vietnam, actually.
Oh, yeah, I have. Yeah, please go and watch that, just guys.
Throwing that plug in there.
Pump it up. If you're still listening.
Military history on YouTube, go and find it.
Please like and subscribe. My children need to eat. as I say, my issue is, and it's a small issue, it harkens into the real history. So Hambleton was in the jungle, for 12 days.
It doesn't
feel like 12 days in the film. And I know it's obviously it's adapted from. He never feels fully safe. There is a bit of cat and mouse in there. But the real Hambleton hadn't eaten for days and was delirious. I think he'd only eaten some corn husks or something, I read. And he lost like 40 pounds when he was found by Norris, and he was absolutely delirious. You know, he couldn't really understand what he was saying. And I wish the film had lent into that a little more. So you see the sequence where Hackman's walking out and he has that interaction with the boy, and there's the Punji trap and he has his little stick. I kind of wish that sequence had just sort of gone into a montage of him getting
a bit
to
more
somewhere.
Over the survival aspect of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I kind of wish that had come in after that, where you could have had him chatting to Clark and him going a bit delirious. You know, maybe just rattling off like golfing scores or something, just to show that the mental break had maybe set in. But he just looks as sprightly as he did when he landed. There's a bit, he has the stick and then the helicopter gets blown up and they run away and he's fine. Like, he can run. There's no issue. But I'm really grasping for something this week, really. I wish they'd done that a little bit more. In Rescue Dawn, you definitely see the physical and mental, breakdown of Christian Bale's character in that one. That one leans into it more, which we'll have to do Rescue Dawn, actually, at some point. It's a very good film. I'll echo Matt. Other than that, it's lean. It's an hour and 40. You can watch it in an evening, have a beer. You're not going to come away like not enjoying it. I think it's one of the sort of unsung heroes of that NAM genre, kind of like how we say Hamburger Hill is like the perfect combat movie. Perhaps this is the perfect rescue movie. Who knows? I'm sure there are going to be Red Dawn lovers. Red Dawn? I'm sure they're going to be Rescue Dawn lovers and Bat 21 haters. Who knows? A very well done, enjoyable film, which I'm glad the patrons pick for us. And, you know, if you want to join the fun on the patrons, please do. You can support us for as little as £2.50 per month, which, you know, gets you a plethora of perks and whatnot. So please go and have a look. Help keep the mics on at FOF HQ. And as always, please do mosey on over to fightingonfilm.com, where you can find the entire back catalogue of the podcast. If you're a new listener, pick out some choice films. You know, come and join the fun on X, formerly known as Twitter, and see us there. And as always, join us again next week for more raw movie reviews. And we'll catch you next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.